Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. John Canzano.
People don't like to hear the truth all the time. You know, people ask you questions, but they don't actually necessarily want to hear the answers.
Love it.
I mean, I like the guy. I listen to him every day.
Canzano, what's going on, man?
He's dead sexy.
I think he does a damn good job.
I'm going to be rooting for this young Portland team, which, you know, is a terrific team. You guys just have a terrific nucleus.
You pay attention to detail. That's why you're so successful.
I just think he's honest. Straightforward and to the point.
You're bringing up something that's probably the average sports fan watching the game didn't pick up on.
I'm really glad to see that someone who speaks their mind is not afraid to tell it how it is.
He's a smart guy, just my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man.
I let my mother listen to him.
Hate him.
You don't want to give nobody a second chance.
Trump. To represent that as some sort of subterfuge by John Canzano, I would have expected far better.
He just sounds like an egotistical idiot.
He was rude, crude, and wrong.
Love to hate him.
Yo, John, I can't stand you. I can't stand you, but I come back every day to listen to the show.
Bald-faced truth teller.
Who is he to judge?
Well, he can raise your eyebrows a lot.
I was angry. He just got my feathers that day big time.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth. Brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights. In need of getting your plant or machinery job done right the first time and on time? Then call High Caliber today.
So I'm driving in today, and I'm driving into the radio show. And obviously, in this great state of Oregon, we're having a great weather day. And it's true that nobody does great weather like us in that the minute we have sunshine, it's like you're dying to put on the short sleeves and you're dying to go running on the waterfront. Yesterday, I was downtown in Portland, and it was like, boom, blankets were out. People were throwing beach balls around. It was like, hey, we're ready. Get it going. It's like you got your good weather pack in the back of your car, and everybody's just peeking outside going, is it true? Is it going to be 70 today? I have heard more people talk about the weather than I've heard talk about the NCAA tournament, which is absolute madness. We have a great radio show, but we also have some great weather today. And I feel like I should join in that. My wife said to me yesterday, she says, man, are we different than other places like this? And I said, yes. People in the Midwest are not sitting around peeking out the blinds going, all right, is it going to be the good weather day? We're like ready. It's almost like we're the guy on the 4th of July who has been waiting all year for the 4th of July. And you know what I'm talking about. That guy who has stockpiled fireworks, many of them illegal. That guy who has the lawn chairs already ready to come out. That guy who comes out and he's got like the fire extinguisher and the garden hose and he's all ready to go. And here comes the 4th of July and there's like almost, there's music set to it. He like breaks out the boombox. Turns it on, and it's like God Bless America's playing, and the sparklers are out, and that's how we start it. I'm serious. When you look outside today, and I don't know if you're driving around today. I don't know if you're listening to this show in an office. I don't know if you're a podcaster who's listening via podcast or on one of the great apps or where you are statewide, but I can tell you this. If you get your eyes open today, what you're going to see is you're going to see people running. You're going to see people walking. You're going to see people kicking a ball around. You're going to see a picnic blanket. You're going to see a basket. You're going to see people like they have gamed for this all year. Like it's a holiday. We're getting a 70-degree day in the Portland metropolitan area. And I know in Eugene, you've got some great weather in Klamath Falls as well, because I looked statewide and I'm like, this might be the best weather day of the year on March the 12th. And we have a great show for you. We're going to talk to Gonzaga assistant coach Brian Michelson. We also have the player that I think might be the most interesting college player in our state. Who am I talking about when I'm saying who is the most interesting college basketball player in our state? Droz, who is it? Who's the most interesting college basketball player in our state?
I mean, my first thought would have to be a Kenny Wooten type player, but I have a hunch that that's not the correct answer.
It's not the correct answer. Kenny Wooten's interesting. I mean, he's got an upside, got a future, might develop into a player that we could all say, hey, that's a really good player. But if we're really talking, Gliss, you booked the show, so I'm not going to ask you. Alabama Adriana is ineligible as well because she hangs out down there with you and would be aware. But you tweet at me. Tell me, who do you think the most interesting player? Now, I'm not saying the most interesting man, because it's not a man. It's a woman. I'm talking about, and I'm going to mess the pronunciation of this up, because I have looked it up, and I've looked both ways. Sabrina Ionescu. Am I close? Am I good? You guys are nodding yes, but every time I say it on the show, the listeners who are diehard Duck fans, who follow women's college basketball at Oregon, will send me phonetic explainers. And I'm starting today's show, and I'm rather embarrassed as a journalist as I start today's show that I don't know how to pronounce her name. And I won't wait until she's actually on air to figure it out. And the fact that she's come in and been so dominant and so interesting, it's almost like when we were doing the Marcus Mariota or Mariota thing. And I love that people had always looked at Mariota and Mariota. And you still see it now. And now we screwed it up worse than anybody. And now we look around and we go, you know what? The rest of the country has figured it out because he's a good player. She's going to be on the show as well. We'll talk to Chad Millman of the Action Network. He'll break down odds for us. But I got to start today's show with the NCAA tournament. It's the biggest, baddest, best postseason tournament in all of sports. But I kind of feel bad that I think the NCAA tournament has gone off the rails a little bit, not just because they expanded the field to 68, because I think it would be a far simpler thing. Because, right, the original thing was expand to 68, throw the dog a bone, give the small colleges who could be in a play-in game a chance to play against one of the big boys. So you get these kind of, you know, decent little scrappy matchups. And yet now we find the Pac-12 conference dominating the play-in games. Because why? Because the Pac-12 conference is bad. The Pac-12 conference was awful this year in college basketball. It was awful. It was Arizona at the top. It was sporadic, you know, it was sporadic uprisings by a team here or a team there. Arizona State started the year really good, had a couple of quality wins in November and December. But let's face it, the Pac-12 only deserved to probably get two teams into the NCAA tournament. And those two teams should have been Arizona and USC. And USC did not get in, which makes me mad. It doesn't make me mad because USC got robbed. It's not a case of larceny that I'm mad at. What I'm mad at is that I now have to feel sorry for USC, because USC does not deserve our empathy. We're talking about the great Trojan Empire with all their national championships and John Robinson and Charles Wright and Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush. Now I have to have empathy for USC. USC had an RPI that was top 35. It had a strength of schedule that was top 40. It had quality wins. It had a second place finish in a Power 5 conference. It deserved to be in the NCAA tournament. Played in the conference championship game. I mean, the resume was there. And USC is not, according to the selection committee, one of the best 68 teams in America. Somehow Arizona State is, with an 8-10 record in the Pac-12 conference. Give me a break, Bobby Hurley. Bobby Hurley, I don't know if you saw the video, but when Bobby Hurley found out he was in the NCAA tournament, he ran out the back door and jumped in the swimming pool. I mean, yeah, I felt like doing it too. Now that we have good weather. I just think it's one of these cases where back in the day, if I can digress for a moment, back in the day when we looked at the NCAA tournament, it was always an eyeball test. Yeah, there were benchmarks that teams had to reach to get consideration, and it was generally 20 wins, 22 wins, 24 wins as the team started to play more games. But it was an eyeball test by the selection committee. It was, where are your quality wins? How did you finish in your own conference? What was your record? We've gone into an era now where there's so much data that I feel like, how can we not pay attention to it? if you have it available. It's like instant replay being available in an NFL game, and the officials going, no, we got this. We're going to make the call without it. I thought that was the biggest thing that was wrong with the NCAA tournament, with the selection and everything. I want your takeaways as well. What did you think of the, what was the, where did your eyes go in the bracket? What did you think when the bracket came out? Because I had three takeaways. I'm going to share them here with you. Droz, where did your eyes go in the bracket? First thing you that when the bracket was revealed.
I mean, I was waiting to see where Miami fell as a Miami fan. I'm like, all right, I had my hunches of which seed they would be. I just wanted to be sure.
Gliss, where did your eyes go when the bracket came out? Gliss.
I was just looking at the fact that, you know, the Pac-12, what you were just saying. I always root for the Pac-12 before anything else, so I was kind of curious how many teams were going to get in, given how bad the conference was.
It was a bad showing. And, you know, Arizona has a shot to get to the Sweet 16, but that's probably about it. The rest of this is just cannon fodder for the rest of the country and is only going to justify why they don't belong in the tournament. I also think it's embarrassing that the Pac-12 didn't have a college football playoff participant. I look at that. I look at the showing in men's basketball. And if we're saying that college football and basketball are driving the bus, then I clearly think the Pac-12 has got to be embarrassed. And Larry Scott, the commissioner of the Pac-12, has got to be sitting back. I know he's going to spin it, but he's got to be sitting back in his heart of hearts going, all right, how can we fix this? How can we help? How can we help our men's basketball teams and our football teams be more competitive? But he's unwilling to do some of the things that are necessary. And the television contract with the Pac-12 network is a big problem. And playing nine conference games when other conferences play eight in football is a problem. If you're not willing to address those things, you're going to have embarrassments like not getting into the playoff and having basketball teams that nobody's seen. It was almost like the selection committee had not watched a Pac-12 game since December. Arizona State had not been good in conference play, and Oregon beat them twice. And I look and I go, how did that team get in? Like, legitimately. I thought there was no shot. I had them nowhere in the bracket. And they're in. So my three takeaways when it comes to the Pac-12 being, I guess, hosed. I don't even think they got hosed. Because I think if you're bad and you have a, hey, you know what? We don't think USC is very good. The conference isn't very good. At least Arizona State had a couple of quality wins. Is that what the selection committee said? Or did they, without due process, look at USC and Louisville in particular and go, we're not going to have them anywhere near the tournament. We're not taking a risk that one of these teams makes a run and we got to answer some questions and strip some wins. Did they really do that? Did the selection committee do that? That was my first takeaway. USC got hosed. My second takeaway is Gonzaga as a four seed. I don't know if you've looked at the bracket, but there's no way that Gonzaga doesn't get to the Sweet 16. They have a clear path. No problem. Opening weekend, no problem for Gonzaga. They'll get to the Sweet 16. And my third takeaway, look out for Purdue. I know that Purdue was really good in the early part of the year. I know they have five seniors. I know that they sputtered a little and looked tired down the stretch. I know they're a jump shooting team. And you say jump shooting teams can't in a tournament win. But Purdue looks dangerous, and I like their path. And I think the fact that they're in a bracket with the weakest number one seed, look out for Purdue. It's not a bad pick. All right, we're going to Gonzaga next. We're Brian Michelson. He's an assistant coach with the Gonzaga team. Portland kid. He'll be joining us. Leave it right here.
You're listening to The Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano, brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights.
Blazers go for 10 straight tonight. Man, Miami will be without Hassan Whiteside and Dwayne Wade. On Twitter, dude on Twitter says, let's hope they wave the white flag. They are waving the white flag. Okay, that's what's going on right here. I don't know if you've looked at the Blazers schedule. We'll look at it later in the show because our next guest, Portland kid, Brian Michelson, will be joining us. Gonzaga basketball assistant. He's with us now. You miss Portland?
You know what? I do. I get down there a little bit to see my family, but I do miss it.
Did you grow up a Blazer fan? Were you like a kid who was at Rose Garden Arena?
Oh yeah, I mean when we came back for the PK80, the players here couldn't believe how old I was. I was pre Rose Garden. I remember the heyday in the old Coliseum, and seeing those great Blazer teams of the early 90s. And then, you know, I remember when they made the transition over to the Rose Garden. So,
who is your favorite Blazer of all time?
A kid of my generation, is probably that backcourt that that was Terry Porter and Clyde Drexler. I'll have to say Clyde Drexler, but with Terry in our league now, I got a soft spot for him, too.
Yeah, it's got to be weird for you to look over there and see Terry Porter and be like, man, I rooted for that guy. Is that weird?
Yeah, no, it is different. Again, you know, the PK 80 brought back a bunch of memories, state tournament games, all sorts of stuff, in the old Memorial Coliseum, and to look up there and see his number, and, you know, even have to describe to some of our guys, hey, that's Coach Porter from Portland up there, you know, was kind of a cool thing.
You were directly involved in the recruitment of Zach Collins, and now he's with the Blazers. Have you been following him at all this season? He's starting to merge.
Oh, yeah. Zach's like a little brother to me, so we're really close. We talk almost daily, and I've been following him. I've been proud of what he's done here over the last 20-game stretch or something, and, you know, still a Blazer fan growing up in Portland, but with Zach being such a big part of it now, kind of got back on the bandwagon here this season, so it's been fun to watch.
We're talking to Brian Michelson, former Gonzaga player. You left Jesuit. You go to Gonzaga as a walk-on. You redshirt. You stayed there and played and were part of the program. And how is it that what drove you to do that? Because you could have gone to somewhere that was less than Gonzaga and probably played more.
Yeah, I would think that would be pretty accurate. But it's part of what makes Gonzaga special. It's a different place. I mean, the quality of people here is unmatched. Obviously, our success on the court in the last 20 years, I was kind of on the front end of that, was so special. But, you know, I came up here with a bunch of guys that helped get the run started from the Northwest, guys that I had known growing up, whether that's Santangelo or a Dickow, a Fromm, a Gord, came up with Blake Stepp from Eugene. And so I had such great relationships on and off the floor, obviously the ability to play for such a great coaching staff. And then, again, just the way that this place is supported by the community and by the university, it made it home.
Brian Michelson is with us, assistant coach at Gonzaga with the basketball team. I hear it all the time where coaches who are taking over a program, especially in your conference, will say, we want to be the next Gonzaga. Why is it that no one can duplicate what Gonzaga has? What's the magic? What's the secret sauce there?
There's a lot of things. I think the first is stability. I mean, Coach Few hasn't left here in 30 years. Tommy's been here 18 years. I've been here in one form or another over 15. And then at the top with Mike Roth, our AD, and that. A lot of it is investment. They say they want to do it, but nobody else outside of BYU, which is kind of a different entity in our league now, invests in it. We have the new arena. This year we put up big center-hung scoreboards. We just built a brand-new practice facility. We're trying to compete with the Pac-12 and the Blue Bloods, and it's just a different level of investment. And then the history. We have 20 years of fans, 20 years straight of, you know, sold-out arenas. The way we travel, it's hard because the resources are so different.
It's really interesting to hear you say that, because I think you're right. People can say they want to do that, but if they're not willing to invest in it and they don't get the buy-in and they don't have special people who are involved, and it's including people like you. I mean, you walked on. You spent all your time there, 5 years there. By the time you're a senior, you're on scholarship and you're a co-captain. I mean, you put in the work.
Yeah, and that's the other cool thing is this place still rewards that. I really believe we found an incredible balance of being kind of the mom-and-pop shop that stories like that can happen, that happened here 20 years ago, that helped get this thing rolling, while being the bluest of the blue blood. I mean, we talked about Zach Collins. He was our first one and done. But, you know, Coach Few's had 15 NBA players. You take out Duke and Kentucky, and he's had pretty much as many NBA players as anybody in college basketball. Obviously, our run to the Final Four, the 20 straight NCAA tournaments, I mean, it's stuff that only the truest blue bloods have done. But I think we still have a little bit of that mom-and-pop shop operation, which those other schools don't.
Bracket comes out. You're a 4 seed. You're in the West, which you have to like. I like your path. When you look at the bracket, do you immediately start looking matchups, or what do you do?
You look one game at a time. We've been to a bunch of these, and you worry about Greensboro on Thursday. You're happy that you're playing in the West. That was big to us to be in Boise or San Diego State, and Boise's obviously even closer. So the way we travel, I think we'll have a lot of fans there, which is important. It keeps us, you know, close to home. But really got to dial into Greensboro and just handle this thing as a 4-team tournament. And the teams that we've had that have had success have done that. We've been really dialed in that first night. and then you take the second game when it comes, and again, it's a 4-team deal. You can't worry about 68 teams, 64 teams, whatever number they're at. It's a 4-team deal, and you know, Greensboro's a really, really good mid-major. Obviously, you know, they're looking to do what Gonzaga was able to do 17, 18 years ago, and with the way they shoot the ball, they have a little bit of a formula to knock off some of the powers.
What do you like about them when you look at film?
The way they shoot the ball.
Yeah.
Greensboro can really, really shoot it. I mean, they spread you out. They got four guys on the floor at all times that make an incredibly high volume of threes. But I don't think you can get caught up as much on that end because they're also analytically a very good defensive team. They're really, really solid. They're solid in their principles. They have bigs that protect the rim. You know, they mix in some tempo presses. And they create a ton of turnovers. So defensively, I think people probably get caught up in the made threes and offense and maybe don't spend enough time on that defensive end where they've been really, really good, a top 50 defensive team all season.
You have Oregon, who had some success, got to the Final Four. You guys were obviously there. You now have your 20th straight NCAA tournament appearance at Gonzaga. You mentioned Zach Collins, and this is a question I think Duck fans are wrestling with. Duck fans, that Duck program is getting better talent. So they're in play for guys like Bol Bol or one and done guys. You've seen Gonzaga develop guys and then transition into being able to get those kids. Is there, I guess you take the best player you can get, but how do you hold on to culture if you start taking too many one and done guys? Is that a weird question?
Nope, not at all. That's a great question. You hit it on the head and you mentioned the word culture. There's nowhere in college basketball that has a stronger and deeper culture than Gonzaga. And so we need the best players we can get, but every one of them has to fit our culture, and they do. And that's why, in my opinion, Zach Collins is one of the most unique one-and-dones that there's been, because he fit Gonzaga's culture. He was here for the right reasons. He came here, put in work. It was never about Zach Collins. It was about Gonzaga and how he could help them be successful. And, you know, I think that speaks a lot to Zach and to his family, and it's why he helped lead us to the pinnacle we've never been to. I mean, we brought the number 10 pick in the NBA draft off the bench for 39 games last year, you know, and he never said a word about it. He realized the guys that were in front of him in the starting lineup. He realized how he helped our rotations off the bench, and he got better every day. He was never looking ahead to the next level. He was worried about how he could be, the greatest Zag possible.
I hated how that Final Four was officiated.
Yeah, hey, it's tough. It's tough for everybody. Playing a game like that. It's tough to have a game officiated like that. And you know, it's probably extra tough for the officials because the game has gone so guard-oriented, and then you've got kind of the only two programs left in college basketball that want to play through bigs.
Yeah.
And you end up in a weird situation. And, you know, obviously, there was tough calls both ways. And Carolina's a great team. I mean, they made a lot of big-time plays when you go back and watch that thing.
I wanted Oregon and Gonzaga in that final.
Yeah, that would have been pretty fun for guys in the Northwest and obviously our whole staff. I mean, Coach Few's from the Eugene area. Tommy's from, you know, just north of Vancouver. I grew up in Portland. It's obviously would have been cool for a lot of us with those Northwest ties.
You come up through Jesuit. You go to Gonzaga. You have put the work in there. Now you're on the staff. When you first started on that staff, what role did you have?
I was more like in an ops role and a non-coaching role. So a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff, day-to-day scheduling, a little bit of game scheduling, the camps. We have big summer camps up here that are huge. And those are really kind of the main things that I started with. And I had a little bit of a belief in myself, but again, I had a belief in Gonzaga and that this place is home and we have an incredible culture of kind of taking care of our own. So a little bit like I did as a player, I thought that if I put in my dues and proved myself that I would get an opportunity to to eventually get into the place that I am today.
Now, your siblings are soccer players, is that right?
Yep.
Now, your parents must have loved being able to go into the gym and stay dry in the winter when you were playing, because otherwise they're sitting out at some soccer field in Oregon.
I think so. I think they owe me there. I think they sat through a lot of rainy games for my sister at University of Portland. And then, my brother played up here and just finished his career, and we can get a little cold up here by the end of the season. So I think that my parents were grateful for that. But, with my brother being up here the last 4 years, that's been another kind of fun part of this Gonzaga journey for our whole family, is how much my parents were able to be up here to see him play.
And your wife, she played soccer at Gonzaga, right?
Yeah, she did. She played 1 year against my sister. They overlapped a little bit.
So you have all this soccer around you, and then your basketball. What are your kids going to do?
Right now my daughter's not planning on doing anything, and my son probably thinks he's going pro in soccer and basketball. So we'll see. I'm sure they'll both have a reality check at some point.
Help parents out with that, because you come from a unique perspective, and we hear specialization all the time. My kid plays volleyball, and there's nobody outright says it, but there's a lot of expectation that you're pretty much going to play year-round. Where do you stand as a parent who is also a coach?
You know, the first thing, my kids are really, really young, so I haven't got there. But I think the one thing my wife and I have promised ourselves is it's going to be up to our kids, and it's going to be whatever their passion is. And like I mentioned briefly, we have two different ends of it. My daughter's almost 7 and really has zero interest in any sport of any kind, which I think has shocked other people in this area that know my wife and I's names and expect her to follow that. And then my son couldn't be more opposite. He wakes up and spends 14 hours a day playing sports at age 3, and we have never pushed him. We don't coach him, you know, so then we get the other half. Well, you guys are already training your son, and he's 3. No, that's what he loves. And I think that that's the most important thing. And then, you know, that specialization thing is hard. I grew up in an era where you could still play quite a few sports. I think I kind of hit the end of that era. Obviously, my brother's quite a bit younger and hit the opposite end where you had to specialize.
Yeah,
I just think through middle school minimum, and I would hope in high school you could still find a way to play 2 sports. I think there's so much value in being on different teams and the things that come with that socially, the things that come with that with your mental development and with your physical development. I mean, we love dual sport athletes up here. We've had some great football players. That brings an unbelievable toughness and competitiveness and willing to hit, you know, some of those things. Soccer kids usually have pretty good feet, right? You know, and we all want our kids to get a Division I scholarship, but the percentage of that are minimal, and everybody wants their kid to be a pro. But I'm coaching at the highest level of college basketball, and we're lucky to have one every couple of years, you know, and we're dealing with the most elite of the elite. So I see what a small percentage of people that is, and most of that's God-given, you know, and not everybody's going to be Zach Collins and be 7'1". And if you're not going to be 7'1", it's going to be really, really hard to make the NBA, you know, and then that's something that no amount of training can control. So I would love if kids and parents could play multiple sports. And hey, if it's what the kid loves and you want to push them and work with them, I think that that is awesome. But it's got to be what the kid is passionate about.
All right, Brian Michelson, we really appreciate you, man. Thank you. And Jesuit High School, born in Portland and on his way with Gonzaga on that coaching staff. Thanks, Brian, for making time for us.
Hey, anytime. Thank you.
All right, there he is. Gonzaga assistant. Look, I love Gonzaga's path in this bracket. He has to be worried about North Carolina Greensboro. I don't. They win that game. They probably get a rematch with Ohio State, who they blew out in the PK80. I think Gonzaga's in the Sweet 16. Put them there and probably further. Leave it right here.
John Canzano, the bald-faced truth. Brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights.
I got a whole list of people who got smoked over the weekend. All weekend long, I had a little notepad in my pocket, and I was like, oh, that guy got smoked. Oh, that guy got smoked. We're going to play Who Got Smoked coming up. So you can start lining up at 503-417-7575 if you want to tell me who got smoked. You know who's on my list of who got smoked? I got smoked yesterday. I was driving in downtown Portland, and all of a sudden, I was over by where the new Under Armour headquarters are. And all of a sudden, at the stoplight there, guy behind me in a Toyota Tercel kind of gave me a little bump. Just a bump. And I drive a bigger car, so I wasn't worried about it. But he gave me a little bump, and I looked in the rearview mirror, and it was an older guy, and he came around me and he pulled over. And I just pulled up alongside him, and I was going to tell him, hey, no big deal, don't worry about it. And I pulled up alongside of him, I rolled my window down, and dude was out of it. Like, he was slurring. And at first I thought, are you drunk? And I said it. I said, are you drunk? And he went, and I said, are you drunk? Have you been drinking? And he just something incomprehensible that I couldn't even understand. Then I looked into his back seat because I was up higher than him. and he had a wheelchair in the back seat. And I thought to myself, is he medicated? Like, should he not be driving? And so I said to him, like, pull over up here. I'll follow you. I wanted to get him off the roadway because people were starting to back up behind us. And as we pulled up, he just took off. So I got his license plate number, and I was trying to call the non-emergency number for the police department. I couldn't get through because I just wanted to be like, hey, there's a dude traveling across the Ross Island Bridge, and I had to go the other way, who is out of it. And, you know, I don't know if he was in a medical emergency and trying to get somewhere. I don't know what happened. We parted ways at the foot of the Ross Island Bridge as I went right and he went straight. Should I have followed him across? Because I was like, I was conflicted. Like, I don't have sirens. Like, can I pull this guy over? Should I do like the movies? Should I get in front of him and just like cut him off, jam him against the side of the Ross Island Bridge? Or should I just like say a prayer and hope he gets across the bridge without killing somebody? Like, he wasn't reckless. He just appeared to be a little out of it. What do you do in a situation like that? Droz, do you know? Gliss? I don't even know if Droz drives. Do you have a driver's license?
Yes.
Do you drive? What do you do, Gliss, if you encounter that situation? Because I can't speed ahead and pull him over.
I probably just would have gotten the license plate number and called it in and let them deal with it.
I tried to call it in. They didn't pick up. And maybe it was a Sunday afternoon. It was a non-emergency number. Then I debated, do I call 911 and jam up 911 with, which is obviously not an emergency. And by the way, people were calling 911 yesterday during the NCAA tournament in Lawrence, Kansas. Did you see that? People call 911 to complain about the format of how CBS was announcing the, or how ESPN was announcing the tournament bracket. They didn't like the format. They just want to see the bracket. Don't give us the at-large teams. Give us the bracket. I agree with that, but it's no reason to call 911. So I don't know if I did the right thing. Maybe somebody in law enforcement can tell me, what are you supposed to do if you encounter somebody like that? Because I was trying to get him off the road. And as docile as he appeared, he still should not have probably been driving a vehicle. He either, his medication was off, or he was drinking. I'm going to guess medication based on some of the factors that I saw. He just appeared to be kind of out of it and probably about 80 to 90 years old. So I hope he made it across the Ross Island Bridge without bumping it. You know, and I felt bad because I was like, should I follow him? Like, what am I going to do if I follow him? Am I just going to follow him somewhere and witness the accident? Or am I going to follow him and do I pull him over? Like, you know, I don't have a siren. I could have went out my window.
I probably would have stayed away from that because I don't know if you can get in trouble for that or not.
Yeah. One time I was on I-5 and I witnessed these two kids that were driving. It was a guy and a girl. And I noticed it first because they had a pickup truck. It was a smaller pickup truck and I was behind them. And I noticed at first that she was all over the pickup truck. Like she was moving from... It had a little cab behind it. She was jumping over the seat. Then she started throwing things out the window. And not just like little things, like little biodegradable things. She was throwing out like chunks of metal and cans and garbage. And so I watched this for a little while. And then she was videotaping him driving. And they were talking. And she was video. I could see the whole thing. And then he started swerving in and out of traffic. And I called the non-emergency number. And the state trooper, the dispatcher connected me to a state trooper. So on my phone, I'm talking to Statey. And he's like, tell me where you are. And I told him, and he said, I'm 2 miles behind you. And I was surprised at how fast Statey made up 2 miles. Because he said, I just want you to follow, don't do anything dangerous, but stay at a distance where you, if you can witness him, that's fine. He told, you know, he said, don't break a law, basically. But tell me what you see. And the guy was weaving in and out of traffic. He really couldn't go 90 miles an hour because he couldn't get that far ahead. But I was like, you know, they're definitely like up to shenanigans up there. And so the state trooper stayed on the phone with me the whole way. Maybe I should have called him, been like, hey, I'm in Portland today. Where are you? Can you get to the Ross Island Bridge? All right, coming up, we're going to play Who Got Smoked. Should we do it now or should we wait it? Let's do it right now. Come on.
It's time for Who Got Smoked? It was a wild weekend, and we want to hear who you think had it bad. Let us know who got smoked. Powered by Reverend's Barbecue in Selwood, home of the Sandwich and Session Special. Call 417-7575. Today's top submission will win a $50 gift card to Reverend's Barbecue.
Who got smoked? Let's go to Mike in Milwaukee. Mike, who got smoked?
Actually, it's Mark in Milwaukee.
All right, Mark in Milwaukee. Go ahead. Who got smoked?
USC got smoked. They had the lowest RPI rating of a lot of at-large bids and still didn't get into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. You hold on. You're the leader in the clubhouse. You might have just won the thing. Mark in Milwaukee. Let's go to Mark in Beaverton. Mark, who got smoked?
All right. I think Oregon Duck basketball fans got smoked because obviously everybody left last year. They brought graduate transfers and other guys in, hoping to maintain the momentum. And, you know, they fought the good fight, but all they got was an NIT, bro. So yeah. I think the fans got smoked because I think their expectations were much higher.
Yeah, I do think that people were disappointed they didn't make the tournament, but, you know, Troy Brown Jr. was the real arrival, and he just is not quite there. I don't see it with Troy Brown Jr. I think it's probably two years away as he's going to be the player we thought he could be. Brad's in Milwaukee. Brad, who got smoked?
Hey, the guy before me said USC had the radio on.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, John.
Yeah, he said USC. USC and Oregon are the two nominees, so you tell me.
Oh, I USC.
Yeah. Matt, you're a repeat, though, so you can't do a repeat. You gotta come up with another one.
Oh, I meant Oregon.
All right, Brad, you ain't gonna win today. Our winner is gonna be Mark in Milwaukee. Mike, Mark, Milwaukee, you win.
Thank you.
Who are you taking a reverence?
Actually, I'm gonna take my wife on a Saturday.
There you go. Enjoy. Appreciate you that you listen. I appreciate everybody who's lined up. But we gotta go because Sabrina Ionescu is coming up. USA Basketball. The most interesting player in college basketball in our state is next.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano, brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights.
The most interesting college basketball player in our state plays at Oregon. And she's with us now. Sabrina Ionescu joining us. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm really good. I'm waiting for this bracket to come out at 4:00. Are you into that?
Oh, of course. I can't wait.
Do you have a preference? Like, if I said to you, is it that big a deal to be a one seed? Is that a respect thing?
No, definitely not.
What matters to you?
To just get an opportunity to play another game. I guess the seeding doesn't really matter at this point in the year. As long as we make the tournament and get a chance to play, that's definitely something.
I think it's really interesting because we've had your coach on several times, and you know he'll come on after big games, and even last year when you guys made a run, maybe when people weren't expecting it, and it feels like things are happening at Oregon with women's basketball faster than expected. But I want to see it from your perspective. Is this just how it's supposed to be, or do you feel like, hey, this is really fast-tracked for me as well?
No, I think this is exactly where we're supposed to be. I mean, we're definitely so young, and it could have taken a few more years to pan out. But I think, you know, we have the talent here in place and the coaching staff in place to do exactly what we did last year and hopefully do this year.
Your recruitment is interesting, and Coach Graves talked about, you know, the day you showed up where you said you might just walk in the gym, and literally you just walked into the gym. You're different that way, aren't you?
Yeah, it doesn't. I don't really need the big reveal.
And it drives me crazy, too, because I see kids who are doing it all the time, and I'm wondering what it's about. What is that about?
Yeah, I don't know. I see it a lot, too. I think social media kind of prompts that. People want, you know, more followers, more likes, and they do it for the attention, and that's what's important to them. But I don't really care for all that, so I just kind of showed up and told him and was ready to come to school.
How big a smile did he have on his face when he saw you come in?
A huge one. I think he was in shock.
Because I think you're so different, and I wish everybody did it your way, because I think it would be more fun to cover, and I think the coaches would say, okay, it's not so much about ego and social media likes, and even in college football, some of those kids did not commit, or they did commit in the early signing period and didn't tell anybody because they wanted to continue to be recruited.
Yeah, I know. Everyone does it their own way, I guess, but...
Sabrina Ionescu is our guest. Who was the first letter you ever got? When you were a young player?
I think it was from William and Mary. I don't even know where that is. Yeah. I was excited, though.
You remember getting it?
Yeah, I definitely remember getting it.
This season, you've done some things that people say, you know, she's going to be a special player. And I want to know, when you're on the court and you're playing a game, are you just having fun, or... Is the game moving as fast as it's always moved, or what has that been like for you as a college player?
No, I'm definitely just in the moment. I don't really pay attention to any of that stuff. I'm just enjoying playing, and my team and my coaching staff and everything, you know, turns out the way it should, and just having fun and playing the game.
You grow up in Walnut Creek. You got good shopping malls at Walnut Creek. You know that?
Yeah.
I've been over in Walnut Creek. I even spent some time over at Stone Ridge Mall, not far from there. So you got a lot to do there. Why, when I proposed Eugene to you, or when it crosses your mind, was there something about getting away from where you grew up, or
no?
What was it?
No, it definitely would not be because of the shopping malls here in Eugene.
Yeah,
because nothing really compares to how nice the Bay Area it is and where I grew up. But it is really nice here. It's definitely more relaxing and slowed down. I mean, the Bay Area is just so upbeat and, you know, traffic and always things to do. And it's just more hectic. And I think life is just kind of slowed down here. So it's definitely different coming to college here. It's like I usually have so much free time after basketball in school. Kind of bored sometimes. It's definitely different, but I just like the school and the atmosphere here, and everything's about the University of Oregon and athletics in Eugene, which is really cool.
I've heard, I've got three daughters, and I've heard coaches say that breeds good competition. You've got a brother, Eddie, who's playing at San Francisco Community College. He's a pretty good player himself. How were those driveway basketball games with you guys?
Bloody, sweaty. They were definitely crazy and long and hectic, but it definitely worked out for the better. I mean, he pushed me and to be who I am, and it was competitive and fun and everything you could think of.
A little easier to play your games when you're physically, at least, when you're in there?
Yes, for sure. Definitely different than playing against my brother in the backyard.
I think about that because, you know, one coach even said, if she's got a brother, she's a rebounder.
Oh, that's funny. No, we definitely went at it a lot growing up and just had fun. It was pretty cool.
You had a chance with the USA Under-23 national team just last summer to play some international basketball. What was that like to go to Japan and compete for your country?
It was really cool. I mean, I had done it. That was my third time with USA Basketball, so it was cool. And it was nice to play with the U-23 team. They were a lot older than I was, and I'd grown up, you know, competing against them and played against some of them even in college my first year. So it was cool learning from them. And then the coaches, Gino and Jeff Wallace from Louisville and Don Staley from South Carolina. So it was just cool being around people like that and learning from them.
You mentioned Gino, and everybody looks at UConn as the benchmark. When you look at the culture that UConn has created, can that be copied? Could Oregon be on the cusp of doing something like that, or is that such an outlier that you got to do your own thing?
I mean, you're definitely trying to achieve you know, the culture that they've established. They do everything at a different level, such a high level, and that's been years of building, and Geno's built that there. So it's definitely in reach, and I think we're definitely capable of it, but it won't be now. I mean, this is the start. This is where we started, you know, last year, the year before, started to build culture here at Oregon, and I think it's just going to continue to grow with the coaching staff we have and the players that we're recruiting, which is exciting, but it'll definitely take a few years to achieve, but it's definitely achievable.
Sabrina Ionescu is our guest, Oregon women's basketball. Before I cut you loose, your favorite class, what class do you like the most?
Law class, I guess.
What do you like about it?
I don't know. I just like the law, I guess.
All right. We wish you the best. We'll be paying attention at 4 o'clock. We wanted to get you on the show. Somebody said get the most interesting player in the state on, and I said I know who it is, and we went right to you.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you.
All right. Good luck to you. We'll get you back on after you play some games in this tournament.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Sabrina Ionescu, Oregon women's basketball. She's different. I don't know if you got that in the interview, and I like that she's different. Too many of these college athletes think they know what they're supposed to say, know what they're supposed to do, make it all about them. I hear a kid who's just happy doing it her way. All right, leave it right here. Punch It Audio is coming up. Plus, we talk about odds in the NCAA tournament. And did Richard Sherman make a huge mistake? Leave it right here. You got the bald-faced truth.
Something is about to happen.
BFT.
Now listen up, everyone.
Let's go.
The bald-faced truth.
John Canzano.
I gotta say, I love him most of the time. I think he's right on.
He's okay.
John's great.
He's a little unusual.
Live every afternoon, 12 to 3 p.m.
I hate that guy because he just never knows what he's talking about.
I think he does a damn good job.
That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth. Brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights. In need of getting your plant or machinery job done right the first time and on time? Then call High Caliber today.
Tiger Woods, relevant, wearing a red shirt on a Sunday. Richard Sherman, also going to be wearing red shirts on a Sunday. But did Sherman make a mistake in negotiating his own contract? We'll talk about that coming up. We'll have all the best sound from all around. Damian Lillard, wearing a red shirt for some of his games, has been named the NBA Western Conference Player of the Week. He averaged almost 35 points a game. The Blazers went 3-0. I said it last night on KGW Sports Sunday. Give them credit. They're real. They're sitting in the three spot. They're also 2.5 games from being out of the playoffs. Their schedule gets tougher. They have a gimme tonight against Miami, who is not going to play Hassan Whiteside or Dwayne Wade. Both players are out per the team. So the Blazers have to get this one, make it 10 straight. But I look at Utah's schedule the rest of the way. Utah's got a bunch of gimmies. They're not even in the top eight in the West. They're going to be in the – Utah will make the playoffs. The Utah Jazz are going to make the playoffs in the Western Conference. So somebody's going to get knocked out, probably the Clippers. But I don't think the Blazers will end up third. I think they'll end up somewhere 5 or 6 in the West. Tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT. Tell me where you see the Blazers. And let's kick around all the best sound from all around.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Let's start with Tiger Woods. Everybody keeps asking, is he back? Is it possible he's back? The Valspar Championship was on. I didn't even know what the Valspar Championship was till Tiger was, quote-unquote, back. Tiger finished second. Punch it.
Today wasn't quite as sharp as I would like to have had it, but I had a good shot at winning this golf tournament, and a couple putts here and there. Could have been a different story.
Yeah, he made a big one on 17 to give himself a chance on 18 that he left short. Everybody keeps saying, will he matter in the Masters? He already matters. He matters already. His performance in this tournament made him matter. This is a 42-year-old golfer who has the second most PGA wins among all golfers. I'm glad that he's competing again. I'm glad that he's relevant again. Is he going to win the Masters? I don't know. Probably not. But is he relevant? Does he matter? Sure. He already matters. Mario Cristobal, Oregon Ducks coach, in the news, talking about his toughness, his team's toughness. Can you actually get tougher? Can you work on your toughness? Here's Cristobal. Punch it.
Toughness is not something that you come out of the womb with. I mean, toughness is something that you have to work on a daily basis. It doesn't always look pretty at first, but I think as guys adapt, they develop a taste for it. They develop a hunger for it, and it drives them to become better and tougher and more physical. So those are things that we talk about. Hey, man, this doesn't just happen. We have to work on it, and we are.
I think you can especially develop emotional or mental toughness. I think that is something that can be developed. Having strength under stress, having the answer when there's a challenge, being able to focus instead of flee, being emotionally stable when things aren't going well, that's stuff you can certainly develop. And you can get stronger, bigger, faster. Cristobal is basically saying, this program's not very tough. Or, as tough as it was, if it wants to take the step to the next level, and again, this is a guy who's talking about playing SEC football in the Pac-12. You got to get tougher. Does it sound like Gary Anderson a little bit? Does that worry you if you're an Oregon fan? Not yet. O.J. Simpson. Is this an old O.J. interview that they're rehashing 12 years later? Just to be clear. This isn't OJ like in a drunken stupor on the strip.
Yeah, this was 12 years ago, and it was kind of touted as like basically a confession interview. And at the time, Fox felt like it was too insensitive and too soon, so they decided to pull it, and it re-aired last night.
Is it gripping or gross that OJ Simpson got the chance to speak in a 12-year-old interview? Punch it.
And this guy kind of got into a karate thing. And I said, well, you think you can kick my ass? And I remember I grabbed a knife. I do remember that portion, taking a knife from Charlie. And to be honest, after that, I don't remember. Except I'm standing there and there's all kind of stuff around. And
what kind of stuff?
Butt and stuff around. I hate to say this, but this is not even that hook.
Hold on a second. So is he confessing? Because I know with Double Jeopardy, he cannot be retried for that crime.
Yeah, so apparently the general consensus from people that watched it, I actually have a DVR, I have not watched the whole thing, but the general consensus is basically that he's admitted to it. He keeps talking about this accomplice, yeah. Charlie, that was with him, and I guess 2 minutes into the interview, he pretty much starts talking in first person. Where he's saying, I did this, I did that. And then he talks about the fact that he blacked out.
Is there another person named Charlie, or is that just one of his personalities?
Charlie. Good question.
His old friend Charlie, and he apparently went over to Nicole's to snoop around. With a cap, gloves, and a knife, and they parked in the alley. Walked around the property, and... Wow. Is it creepy? Should Fox be airing this? I want to hear from you on that. Is it gripping or gross? 503-417-7575. Let's talk about Richard Sherman. Just a few years ago, 2014 NFC Championship game, Richard Sherman barking at 49ers wide receiver Michael Crabtree. Punch it.
Richard, let me ask you the final play. Take me through it.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get. Don't you ever talk about me.
Who was talking about you?
Crabtree, don't you open your mouth about the best. Or I'm going to shut it for you real quick.
I like how she's like, well, who's talking to you? And I love how he's so angry there. And then when she says that, he like comes down and he's like, Crabtree. And then he continues yelling. Listen.
Richard, let me ask you the final play. Take me through it.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. again. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get. Don't you ever talk about me.
Who was talking about you?
Crabtree, don't you open your mouth.
I love that. He's like, Crabtree, don't you open your mouth. Here's the deal. Richard Sherman to the 49ers. I joked about it when Sherman was released last week. Going to the Niners? Totally tongue-in-cheek. And here he is, headed to the 49ers. Taking some criticism, though, today. He negotiated his own contract. He wanted to save the 1.5% NFL standard for contracts. And negotiated his own deal. He gets a $3 million signing bonus. Next season, he'll get $2 million for passing a physical on the first day of training camp, $2 million as a base salary, and $2 million if he plays in all of the games as an active player. He gets a $1 million incentive for playing 90% of the snaps and a $1 million Pro Bowl incentive and another $2 million for making all pro. Objectively, this contract is so seriously tilted in the 49ers' favor that people are going, this guy just hosed himself. I don't know. Richard Sherman's a different cat, all right? Let's start there, because how many players would have the confidence to represent themselves in the beginning? And Sherman told Peter King of Sports Illustrated that he spent 10 or 12 hours poring over contracts to educate himself. Stanford guy, he's a smart guy, and he's different. But here's the mistakes he made in signing with the Niners. First of all, he had all kinds of leverage. The Niners needed a veteran defensive back who could help their young defense get better. They needed Richard Sherman, and they'd love nothing more than to take Seattle's spirit animal and put him in the defensive backfield on their team. That's what they just did. He gets released at 1 p.m. on Friday. By Friday night, he's in San Jose with his fiance. That is another mistake, by the way, because the Niners had to know when the fiance came along that they had him. I'm not saying he shouldn't have brought her, but the minute the Niners management laid eyes on Richard Sherman's fiance, they had to know, oh, he's here. This is destination. They go to dinner with Kyle Shanahan and Shanahan's wife. By noon the next day, they're negotiating a contract. So why did Richard Sherman need to make a deal Friday and Saturday? Why did he like have one day to get it? He didn't. He should have shopped around. Even if he was going to San Francisco, he could have created leverage. They needed him and wanted him. He was not very experienced at negotiating a contract. I think he let his ego and his emotion get in the way. The Niners, by the way, John Lynch saying, we had something that nobody else had. What was it? Quote, the ability to play Seattle twice a year, end quote. And Richard Sherman said, I'm vengeful in that way. He's different. He's got a little bit of maverick in him. But yes, the Niners have a new spirit animal, and his name is Richard Sherman. Brian Michelson was on this radio show earlier, Gonzaga assistant coach. He talked about Blazers rookie Zach Collins. Punch it.
Zach's like a little brother to me, so we're really close. We talk almost daily. Been following him. I've been proud of what he's done here over the last 20 game stretch or something. And still a Blazer fan growing up in Portland, but with Zach being such a big part of it now, kind of got back on the bandwagon here this season, so it's been fun to watch.
Zach Collins and Ed Davis have been a key for the Blazers. That bench unit that lacked offensive punch has found an identity with those two guys. And you look at the way that the Blazers on Friday beat up on the Warriors. What I liked most about that win was the fact that the Blazers just killed the Warriors on the boards. And Collins and Ed Davis, big, big improvement for that bench unit. All right, coming up, our big splash is ahead of us. Plus, we'll talk odds and the NCAA tournament. But I also want to know if, when you look at Richard Sherman to the 49ers, Seahawk fans, do you blame Sherman? Are you mad at all about Sherman? Because he seems hot about that. And if you're a 49er fan, can you accept Richard Sherman in your, because I know Niner fans, like Gliss, I hate Richard Sherman. I love Richard Sherman. A day later, am I right? Niner fans, weigh in on Richard Sherman. Seahawks fans, tell us what it means to lose this guy and what kind of player are the 49ers getting Really? You know him better than Niner fans. 503-417-7575.
This is the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano, brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights.
Richards, let me ask you, the final play, take me through it.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get. Don't you ever talk about me.
Who was talking about you?
Crabtree, don't you open your mouth about the best. I'm going to set it for you real quick.
Richard Sherman now in a 49ers uniform. Seahawk fans, what kind of player are the Niners getting? Is he washed up? Is he over the hill? Is he a distraction? Or are they getting a solid veteran player who's going to make them better in so many ridiculous ways, and especially on two Sundays next season is going to be interesting? And Niner fans, how quickly can you shed the "I hate Richard Sherman" and turn it into "Go Richard Sherman"? I'm seeing it all over social media. Sherman himself said he's got to unblock all the 49er fans that he's blocked over the last couple of years. 503-417-7575. Let's start with the Seahawk fans. We'll go to the Niner fans next. Kyeen is called in. What's up, Kai?
Canzano, thanks for taking the call, man.
You bet.
I think it's a bad move just for him to go in the same division against one of our, you know, used to be biggest rivals. And yeah. I mean, you watch him after playoff games. He played with his arm hurt, and people barely threw at him after that, even after his arm was hurt. And so this guy is a competitor, and he's fire all day long. So it's going to be a shame when we have to play him six times over the next 3 years.
Are you mad at Sherman? Because some people burned
not
his jersey. Or are you mad at the Seahawks? Or do you just think he should have gone in another division out of respect? Or where do you stand on that?
I think that he's a competitor, so he can go wherever he wants. And if he wants to compete against, you know, the best, he can go wherever he wants, because yeah. He's proven that time and time that he can do work. And I'm not mad at him at all. I mean, the Seahawks could have tried a little harder maybe or done something different to keep him on, but not mad at him at all. It is going to be a pain to see him six times, you know, over the next 3 years, but we'll see what happens.
Appreciate the call. 503-417-7575 is the number. Some Seahawks fans, like within hours of him announcing that he would be going to the Niners, started burning his jersey. And he was like, don't be mad at me. They released me. Show business, not show friends. Seattle said he could take a huge pay cut and stay. Detroit said he could take a pay cut and go to Detroit. I still think he should have shopped around a little. Niner fans, where do you stand on this? Can you root for this guy? 503-417-7575. I still want to hear from Seahawk fans, too, as well, who could tell us what kind of player the Niners are getting at this age. Tim's in Wilsonville. Tim, Niner fan? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Hey, John.
How you doing?
Good. Thanks for taking my call. My family's been Niner fans my entire life. I lived in Seattle there for a short time while the Legion of Boom was what it was, and Richard Sherman became in his heyday. And, you know, I'm glad you played that clip, because I've had my head buried in my hands at that moment, hating Richard Sherman.
Yep.
And you can hear it in the Seahawks fans' voice right there. They are scared. They saw what Jimmy G was doing the last five games of the season. We don't need much on the defense. So even if he's just a leader in the locker room, that's great. But I'm sitting here saying, as a Niner fan, I hate Richard Sherman one day, hey, but I'd love to have him on my team. So I'm pumped about that.
I said that last week as he was being ready to get released. I said he's the kind of guy that when he's on your side, you love him. And when he's on the other team, you hate him. And it's respect. And you saw some of the Niners who have tweeted out responses saying, I hated competing against this guy. It's in all of sports, that's what you want. You don't want to be known as a fun date in sports. I say that even to my 15-year-old when she's playing volleyball. I say, hey, your job is to make that kid on the other side of the net have a bad day. And she's like, Dad. I'm like, no, really. That's your job. It's not personal. Richard Sherman makes people have bad days. At his age, do you worry that, you know, he's washed up? Yeah, I mean, he's coming off an Achilles tendon rupture. He's 29. But this is a guy that you didn't want to cross on a football field because he's got that X factor that George Plimpton wrote about. And, you know, Sherman says Jimmy G had a huge part. Garoppolo had a huge part in him joining the Niners. Not like they share the same agent, but still. Eric is in Portland. He wants to weigh in on Sherman. Eric, go ahead.
Hey, John. Yeah, so I was born in Santa Clara, California. I'm probably the only Niners fan that's happy to actually move to the South Bay in my hometown there. And what I always hated was that I was growing up, I was both a 49er fan and a Seahawks fan, but that was when they were in the AFC, and then the NFL screwed everything up by moving them into the same division for me, and then all of a sudden, all these people I used to be able to watch Seahawks games with started hating on my team, and then that's when the rivalry really began for me. But I really started hating Sherman, just like you said with that clip there, that 2013 NFC Championship game when he was taunting Crabtree and did the choke sign towards our quarterback and everything. I just hated his guts so bad then. But like you were just saying before, he's the kind of guy, my perfect analogy is Draymond Green. He's the Draymond Green of the NFL. You don't want to play him ever. You hate his guts, but when he's on your team, you love him.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to get a Sherman 49er jersey and wear it around my city of Vancouver and show it off to all the Seahawks fans.
Can't wait, Eric, to see that jersey in Vancouver. All your Seahawks friends are going to hate you. But here's the bottom line, though. As a Niner fan growing up, the Seahawks did not matter to me. I have to reiterate this. The Seahawks were not on my radar. Keep in mind, the Seahawks didn't move to the NFC West until 2002. The Niners had enjoyed a really long run. The Seahawks had no history whatsoever except for Jim Zorn and Steve Largent. So if you were a Niner fan, the Seahawks were well aware of who you were and who your team was. We didn't even notice you. Then you moved to the NFC West, and we still didn't notice you for a while. It's been really interesting to see the Seahawks dominate that division for a stretch. And I'll go back to 2014 in that NFC Championship game, because that 2014 NFC Championship game decided the Super Bowl. It didn't decide who was going to the Super Bowl, but the Niners and the Seahawks were the best two teams in football that year. Sherman made the play. The Seahawks got the interception. They went on and they blasted Peyton Manning and the Broncos in the Super Bowl. If the Niners had gone to the Super Bowl, they would have blasted Peyton Manning and the Broncos. They were the best two teams. They were like the Rockets and the Warriors. And Sherman was that guy. He was the spirit animal, so to speak, of that team. 503-417-7575. Let's go to John, who's in Wilsonville. John, what's up?
Your other caller used the exact same analogy I was going to with the Draymond Green comparison. More importantly, now the Niners don't have to draft a corner expecting that person to start. They can draft via depth.
Yeah.
And then know that Sherman's going to help that person grow, which is kind of nice. And then they can focus on some other areas, which, you know, it's not a crazy statement to say that the Niners are going to contend with the NFC West this year now.
I think the Jimmy Garoppolo signing and the way that Garoppolo finished that season and the Niners finished last year gave people a lot of hope that they might come in and win the NFC West this next season. Now you add a player, and I think John Lynch did a smart thing in adding a player who gives you experience, because you got to grow up fast. And you love to have players who have played in big games when you've got a young team that's trying to matter. Yes, you hate playing against Richard Sherman. You hate playing against Draymond Green. Who are some of those other players that you hate to play against, but you love on your team? 503-417-7575. Jeremy's in Gladstone. Jeremy, go ahead.
Yeah, hey, lifelong Niner fan, 39 years old. So I was back in the day when it was Montana and Young and everybody else. I've seen it all. you know, I think the addition of Sherman is good because he's a leader. And I think we've been lacking that a lot, just all around. He makes people around him better. He's a smart player. And the best part is my best friend of 20 years is a diehard Seahawks fan. So I cannot wait to get a 49ers Sherman jersey, cut the sleeves off, and meet him at the gym. I can't wait.
I love that. Take some video of that when he shows up. All right, I want you to tell me, if you're a Seahawk fan, who are the Niners getting? And if you're a Niner fan, are you excited about this, or do you have mixed feelings about getting Richard Sherman? And also in and around that, think about those athletes that you would love to have on your team. Like, you love him when he's your guy, but other teams just hate him. And I'm talking about Richard Sherman, and I'm talking about Draymond Green. Who are those other players that really polarize fan bases? And by polarize, I mean, if he's your guy, you're wearing his jersey. And if he's not, you're burning it. 503-417-7575 is the number. You weigh in on that. Later in the program, we're going to talk NCAA tournament with Chad Millman of the Action Network. He'll talk to us about the odds. How do you play odds on this NCAA tournament? Where are the good bets and where is the action? We'll talk about that coming up. But before that, I want those athletes that you hate, that you love to hate, and also that you can't stand when they're on the other team, but you'd root for in a heartbeat when they're on your team. 503-417-7575.
You're listening to The Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano, brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights.
Who do you love to hate? Draymond Green comes to mind. When he's your guy, right? He's your guy. But when he's on the other team, you don't like Draymond Green. You root against him. Who are those other players? When you talk about loving to hate players.
I think when you get to, you know, a certain level, you don't need another team to motivate you. You know, we want to win a championship. They want to win a championship. We know what it, you know, what it's like. We know the feeling. We love the feeling. They know the feeling. They love the feeling. So I don't think, you know, we necessarily need to, you know, hear LeBron say, oh, I'm going back to work, for us to say, yeah, we want to work, and vice versa, you know.
Give me an idea of who those players are. 503-417-7575. Draymond Green, Richard Sherman. Who else? Ben is in Beaverton. Ben, who you got?
Boy, man, I got a litany of them. First off, it was Richard Sherman, but now that he's playing for the Niners, I really don't care that much. Hated that guy. But here's one that I think you might relate to. Here's one for you that I think you might relate to, though.
Right.
Yo.
Yeah.
Yo.
Yeah.
Growing up Arizona, we didn't really have a lot of players that people loved to hate, so I can't really pick one. I know Fitz gave a lot of people fits, but that's, you know, what that is. But there was one that I grew up with loving from New York, LT. I'm not sure who hated him, but I know I loved watching him play.
Jets fans hated him. All he did is sack. How about Patrick Beverley? Patrick Beverley in the NBA. Really annoying defender. How about Kevin Garnett? Kevin Garnett annoyed me, but you know what? Minnesota fans, when they had Kevin Garnett, went bananas for him. How about Luis Scola? I remember when Luis Scola just killed the Trailblazers in the 2014 NBA playoffs. Or no, it was the 09 playoffs. 08-09. Scola was gone by the time they played in the 2013-2014. Luis Scola. That was a guy. How about J.J. Barea? J.J. Barea. That's a guy you was on the other team. You're like, eh. Who else? 503-417-7575. You tell me. Easy one for me. Patrick Beverley. How about DeMarcus Cousins? That's a guy. If DeMarcus Cousins is on your team, you're rooting for him. If he's on the other team, you're like, that guy, DeMarcus Cousins sucks. But you know down deep, he's really good. 503-417-7575. Bill's in Portland. Bill, what's up? Bill, what you doing? Bill's gone. If you're going to call in and you can't hold for just a couple minutes, you got a busy life. I'm just saying, I don't need everyone to call. And I hear from people all the time. I hear from people all the time who say things like, I never call and I listen every day. And I say to people, hey, you should call in. We like when people call in. We like new callers, especially. Like, we could do a first time caller thing. But what we don't need is we don't need everybody to call. I was talking to the manager of the gym that I work out at yesterday. He told me they have like 1,500 members that are new members that they've signed up. Like, what a mad rush that is. Do the math on the $38 a month or whatever they're charging. 1,500 new members that recently signed up. And I'm like, the gym doesn't seem any busier. So what I assume is happening is people are signing up for the gym and not using it. Can you imagine if everybody who signed up for the gym showed up at the same time? What the gym would look like? Droz?
I know what that looks like. It's a college campus gym.
Just a line out the door?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Let's go to Greg, who's on I-5. Greg, welcome.
Hey, man. I'm a kind of a Blazers fan, but mainly a lot of guys at work. The guy would be James Harden. I'm a big fan of James Harden. I don't hate him. I want him on the Blazers. It's never right. gonna happen, but the guy is I think he's the best point guard in the league, but every other Blazers fan I talk to, they can't stand it.
He gets to the foul line.
Fear the beard.
Tell you that. Fear the beard. How would that go over in Portland? That would be big time. Everybody be growing beards. Everybody who doesn't already have one. Scott is on I-5. Scott, what's up?
Hey, I got to go back a few years, but how did you like the defense of Danny Ainge before he came to Portland?
Yeah, Danny Ainge was a guy you didn't like unless he was on your team. It's true.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, competitor. It always comes back to that. It's guys who are competitors. Scott, who else you got? You got any other ones?
No, he's just on my mind driving, and that's all I could think of.
No, but the fact is that if that occurred to you, yes, I want you to call in. But often it is one guy, isn't it, in the NBA? I just remember Steve Garvey in baseball being that guy. Like, if the Dodgers are like, oh, this is our All-American guy, everybody else is like, that's obnoxious. Cal Ripken had universal appeal. Everybody loved Cal Ripken Jr. Everybody said, oh, Cal Ripken Jr. is a great guy. How about Tom Brady? Does he hold that status? Or, I mean, is he a guy that if you're a Patriots fan, you idolize him, you have a shrine to him and your house, but if you're not a Patriots fan, it's obnoxious to you? Pete's in Beaverton. Let's go out to Pete. Pete, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm going to follow up when you started the show out with talking about the Pac-12 lack of teams and how bad they are. It comes down to one thing. The Pac-12, top to bottom, has the worst coaches in the country. Just name the best coach in the Pac-12, and you'd say, that guy could get an ACC job? No. Would this guy get a Big 12 job at the moment? No. Or a Big 10 job? No. And it comes down to coaching. The coaching in the Pac-12 is terrible. And I'm the guy last week who ranked on Dana Altman is being a pathetic basketball coach. He's terrible. He has no clue. And I would love, like I said, love to sit down and break down the teams with anybody. I'm not an expert, but I coached varsity basketball in Oregon for 12 years. And I mean, that's my end of my coaching career, but I certainly know basketball. And that's why the Pac-12 only got two teams in. Well, basically two teams.
I think some of it, though, too, Pete, had to do with the fact that the Pac-12 was hit particularly hard by the early entry college players going to the NBA, harder than any conference in America. Oregon lost three players. And while it's true that, you know, that's just the state of college basketball, there may be some truth in what you're saying. I thought the conference when Ben Howland was in it was better off, when you had the Mike Montgomery, Ben Howland. You know, Ernie, I think Dana Altman is a better coach than Ernie Kent at Oregon. I think they've made an upgrade. I think Wayne Tinkle is an upgrade of Craig Robinson and Jay John. So I think Oregon and Oregon State have gotten a little better there. Markedly better, I think, in Oregon's case. Ernie Kent could recruit, he couldn't coach. But I don't know if the game anymore in college athletics is X's and O's. I think it is heavily based in recruiting. College football is the same way. It's why Willie Taggart, with a losing record, can go to Florida State and get, you know, call a shot, $5 million a year. Let's go out to Andrew in Vancouver. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Hey, you know, I'm thinking about my team and guys that I love, and I'm a big Brewers, Milwaukee Brewers baseball fan.
Yeah.
And guys that I love, guys like Nigel Morgan, you know, Carlos Gomez, guys that are aggressive on the base paths and kind of irritate the pitcher and disrupt what the other team is trying to do. And I think in baseball, a lot of times, those are the guys that are, you know, are hated because they're such a nuisance to deal with, especially on the base paths. As far as the NBA, somebody that I have loved to hate, and I was unfortunate enough to have him be coaching my hometown team for a time, is Jason Kidd. I mean, he makes it pretty easy, I feel.
Yeah, and I think he's got off-court stuff that I think makes that easier to happen. The caller earlier brought up Terrell Owens. How about Ray Lewis when he was playing? I think Brady's on that list still. Isn't Dominican Sue a player that you love to hate? If he's on your team, you love him because you know how active and what a pain he could be. 503-417-7575. Tell me the players you love to hate. Let's go quickly to Mike in Portland. Mike, go ahead.
So, man, first of all, I agree with that guy about Dan Altman. You know, you guys keep rationalizing mediocrity. You said he lost a lot of players to the pro. Well, man, Kentucky and the top teams, they lose players every year, but still they in the NCAA tournament. So you can't use losing players as an excuse. This guy knew that these players was going to be gone, so he should have been prepared. So I agree with that guy. The coaches in the Pac-12 are sorry, man. And this new guy you got down there, that Cristobal guy.
Yeah.
I say, man, we've already done showed us, man, that he don't have control because he let that one guy sit on the sideline and give a pep talk to his team. He shouldn't even been over there. So, no, man, quit making excuses for these coaches, man.
Mike in Portland keeping it real. Is Mike right? Are we making excuses? I'm an apologist for Dana Altman all of a sudden. 503-417-7575.
More John Canzano with the bald-faced truth, brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights.
When something goes wrong at my house, like maybe like the door's not closing correctly, I'm always looking for the why of it. Like, okay, do I need to look at the hinges? Is there something wrong? Is there warping going on? Is something wrong? And with the Pac-12, you look at the college football performance in the Pac-12, no participant in the college football playoff again. You look at the NCAA tournament and you see a disappointing basketball season in men's basketball. Will you acknowledge that there's something wrong? Will the Pac-12 acknowledge something's wrong? I want to talk about that coming up. You can line up now if you want to at 503-417-7575. Mike has raised in the last segment, along with another caller, that the coaches are not very good in the Pac-12 conference. Are you buying that as the reason why the basketball team struggled? That the basketball season was it's a down year for the conference. Is it cyclical? Is it something else? Plus, I still want to hear about the players you can't stand. Who is it that you love to hate? Let's go out to the phone lines. The phone number is 503-417-7575. Ryan's in Portland. Go ahead, Ryan.
Hey, thanks, John. You know what? Mike, I love you, man. You're a great caller. The show would not be the same without you. However, I need to call you out on something because Oregon basketball was not considered a basketball school until maybe around this time of year last year when Oregon was upsetting Kansas and making a deep run in the playoffs. Oregon is a new basketball school. They're a new school to attracting one-and-done talents, okay? Dana Altman has proven that you get those system guys, you mold them in years one and two, and they blossom in years three and four. Now, I think there's going to be a huge learning curve, John, in getting these kids up to speed. Are one and done going to work at Oregon? I don't know. Track record shows this year it did not work. I think he needs those guys that are going to be in his system, that are going to learn the Dana Altman way, they're going to learn how to press, and they're going to play duck basketball. So if you want to compare Oregon to, like, the Kansases, the Kentuckys, the true one and done, they are not there yet. So, Mike, you're arguing with yourself.
Is Ryan right? 503-417-7575. Is Mike arguing with himself? Mike, I take a little bit of offense at that call from Ryan. He says the show would not be the same without Mike. I'll have you know that the show existed for 10 years, probably about 8 before Mike even called in. Mike's come and go. This Mike may stay. Who knows? 20 years from now, we may be on air and Mike will be calling in and saying, "Say, man, I got a bone to pick. You call this show the bald-faced truth, it should be called the bald-faced kind of the truth. And here's why." I know Mike's somewhere laughing right now. 503-417-7575. John's in Vancouver. John, what's on your mind?
Bill Laimbeer.
Oh, you love to hate that guy.
Yeah, he's right at the top.
What is it?
There's a couple others from Laimbeer.
Yeah, what made you hate Laimbeer?
I didn't really hate him, but I knew teams that would, fans. I'd call him a professional agitator, really smart guy, came from a good family, and he did it on purpose.
Yeah.
Just to get under people's skin.
That's part of his game.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then here's a couple others, Dick Butkus. And then the third, I like him a lot, was Bob Gibson.
Yeah.
Back in the days when you could dust a guy off, you know.
Give you a shave.
Yeah.
Close
shave. I
got something
on the NCAA.
Yeah, what's up?
A little bit, and I think you hit it on the head with the rules. I come from a background of that stuff, and you can't develop players. They're not long there long enough.
And that's why I think the Pac-12 has got a good idea. It's in its infancy. It's too early to bring to market. But the Pac-12 has a good idea. And the idea that the Pac-12 conference has floated is that college should be for college athletes. Wild, I know, wild. So if you are an athlete who is a one-and-done prospect, maybe college basketball is not for you. That's the idea that the NCAA has floated. And it would be incumbent upon the NBA to develop a G League that would be ready for the elite of the elite high school players, who aren't really serious about going to class, aren't really serious about sticking around at a college for 3+ years. And the goal would be that if you go to college, you sign a commitment that says, "I'm going to stay in college for 3+ years before I would even enter the NBA draft." You're going to get an education. And maybe if you develop, you become a pro prospect. Or maybe if you're a pro prospect who valued the education, You do it because, hey, I'm going to get an education. I'm going to go to college and be a normal kid. And what I'm saying is there's a fork in the road there that says if you're a one-and-done type player, like Zach Collins going to Gonzaga, and you know you're a one-and-done, you go to the G League instead. Then you enter the draft. And you leave college for kids who are going to be in college for 3+ years. We've talked to Zach Collins on this show about what he misses about college, and some of that is him hanging out, playing video games, being a college kid. I do think it would force those kids at age 18 to make a decision. It would force them to have to say, all right, how do I view myself? How do I see myself? What's my reality? You know, it wasn't going to change Damian Lillard going to Weber State. He was going to go to Weber State. He was going to stay in college. Wouldn't have changed a damn thing. For the vast majority of players, it wouldn't change anything. But every year there'd be 20 or 30 players, there were high school players, who thought they were one-and-done guys, because, you know, it's more than just the reality there. And those players are going into the G League instead of the college game. I think in the end, once we mentally adjusted to it, college basketball would still be a blast. And the challenge would be for coaches not only to convince a kid to come to their college, but to convince a one-and-done player that college was the right place for them. I think it's an interesting idea. It's too early to bring to market, but I think the Pac-12 might just have their first good idea. Like, this might be the first good thing. Because the Pac-12, they've sat around like the Three Stooges, and they've gone, all right, here's an idea. Let's play 9 conference games while the SEC only plays 8. That seemed like a good idea. Oh, yeah, that's a great idea. That's a great idea. Then they go out, and what happens? They're not in the college football playoff because their best team has an unfortunate loss in conference play. The Pac-12 has also sat around and went, here's an idea. Let's have a network that we have control over our own games. Let's dramatically overstate how much money it's going to make. Let's not get a distribution out of the gates on DirecTV, thereby cutting off about 60% of the audience. And let's run with that. Is that a good idea? Oh, yeah, 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 that's a great idea. Pac-12 has also sat around and went, how about this idea? Let's start kicking off games later and later, and let's see how many people show up. It's ridiculous. It's like a restaurant going, we're no longer going to be open up at 4 p.m. for dinner. We will now open at 9. And nobody showed up. Can't figure out why. Man, we're just not making the money we used to make. Nobody's coming. This may be the first great idea that the Pac-12 has had. And it's not even in their area of expertise. They're just going, hey, maybe college should just be for college kids. Yeah, run with that. It's a great idea. 503-417-7575. We'll talk about this. Let's go to Manny, who's calling in. Manny, what's up?
Hey, not much. How you doing? First time caller, but hey, I really love your show.
Thank you, Manny.
Hey, I just wanted to tell a couple of players that I would have loved to have play, but couldn't stand them when they did, was Dennis Rodman.
Yep.
Although he did go to the Bulls, you know, I loved how he played there too as well. But then another one's old John Starks for the Knicks.
Yeah.
That guy had some heart, old John Starks.
Yeah, he had heart. And players who play hard. Matt Barnes is a guy who comes to mind too. He'd be your guy. Who's the most hated player on Duke today? Is that easy?
Yeah, Grayson Allen.
Is Grayson Allen the kind of player where if he's on the other team, you hate him, but if you're a Duke fan, you love him? Or do Duke fans hate him also for the butt screen? That guy is finding new body parts to check people with. I'm not using my hands. All right, coming up, we're going to talk about the NCAA tournament. We're going to tell you how to win money playing the NCAA tournament.
I want you all to listen up. This is important stuff, all right?
Okay.
The bald-faced truth.
Call 503-417-7575 or 877-733-0750 or text to 64636.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth. Brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights. In need of getting your plant or machinery job done right the first time and on time? Then call High Caliber today.
Get your bracket out. Chad Millman, Action Network, joining us. He's going to make you smarter when it comes to the NCAA tournament. Chad, you going to come through for us here?
John, I'm going to do my best.
Tell us, when you see the bracket come out, where does your mind or eyes go immediately?
It immediately goes to my wallet, thinking about all the cash I'm going to earn during the NCAA tournament. I would say first I look at I look for the teams that I believe throughout the season are undervalued when it comes to the selection committee, which I think historically has proven it puts too much credence in program reputation and too little credence in how well teams do throughout the year, regardless of the name on the front of their jersey. And so you can look at a team like Cincinnati, which arguably is underseeded, even though they're a 2 seed, you could look at them and be like, wow, this team was phenomenal all year and can play both sides of the ball, could probably be a number one seed. Or you could look at a team like Arizona State, which gets in because they beat Kansas early in the year and Xavier early in the year, but then kind of faded. Same with Oklahoma. So I try to think about where's the opportunity going to be based on the metrics that I follow, what I know gamblers are thinking about, and the committee, which generally looks at this through the prism of public perception and sort of what squares think about.
I think that's an interesting perspective because you see Arizona State get in and everybody is, who watches the Pac-12 in this part of the country is like, what are they looking at? Like, that was not on my radar. I thought USC would get in, Arizona State would not.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like, who knows what the committee is thinking about? They say they're thinking about strength of schedule over an entire season. And so that's why they're counting Oklahoma as such a high seed and getting in, even though they lost 11 of their last 15, or Arizona State because of those two wins we talked about earlier. It's actually an interesting juxtaposition because the College Football Playoff Committee, they actually account for teams getting better over the course of the year. And it seems like this year, at least by what the reasoning is from the selection committee for college basketball, they actually weren't giving teams credit for getting better over the year and weren't taking away credit for teams getting worse, which I think does a disservice to teams that sort of play better and become better teammates and more cohesive units over the course of a 3 to 4 month season.
Which is the goal, right? I mean, that's kind of the point of having a season.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Like, you want the teams that are playing the best at the time that you want to see the best in competition. So, you know, it's too bad you don't get a team like St. Mary's. It's too bad you don't get Louisville. It's too bad you don't get Notre Dame. But you're getting Syracuse, and you're getting Arizona State. You're getting Alabama, which, you know, had a losing record in its conference. You're getting Oklahoma, which faded significantly at the end of the college basketball season.
We're talking to Chad Millman, former Sports Illustrated reporter and CNNSI correspondent, now with the Action Network. This bracket comes out, and I do the same thing you do. I look at Kansas, and I go, Kansas is overseeded. Like, who's going to knock out Kansas? Why do you think the committee valued some brand names but not others?
Well, I think part of it has to do with, you know, do they win their conference title? And certainly Kansas did that. Which brand name do you think they didn't sort of prescribe any value to?
Well, I saw Louisville on the bubble, and I thought Louisville suffered a curious fate when compared to USC, and when I look at the FBI and the DOJ investigation, and I wondered if the committee was just saying, we don't want to deal with that.
I think that's a different – that's not apples to apples, though, to me, because, like, you could say – did the committee value Kansas over Duke? Because both teams got in and, like, could be relatively high-seeded and sort of are somewhat unscathed by the investigation. Louisville didn't do itself any favors with sort of the season that it had either, and, like, had too many losses and, you know, came down as a legit bubble team that probably should have made it but didn't. And I do think it's because of some of the baggage. But Kansas is one of those teams where, because they win their conference every year and because they've had success, you know, in the tournament in the past, they legitimately get overseeded entirely because of public perception. And they're a team that could just as easily lose in the second round to Seton Hall or to North Carolina State if their, you know, three-point game is off. And so that's where I think the selection committee plays a little bit like the general betting public and only bets the favorites, so to speak, when it comes time to making these choices and to seeding teams.
We're talking to Chad Millman with the Action Network. What are you guys doing right now? What kind of tools are you offering on your website?
Oh, man, we got so much good stuff right now. We have a bracket simulator. So let's say you want to make a bracket entirely based on the highest percentage upsets. You can do that. If you want to make a bracket based entirely on the highest percentage favorites, you can do that. If you want to do it based on Ken Pomeroy's ratings, kenpom.com is a really popular website. that looks at sort of high-level analytics and metrics. You can make it based on that. You can make it based on ESPN ratings. Any way you want to make a bracket, you can go to the simulator and make it. But we've also got sort of as soon as the brackets came out last night, we had analysis on every game from two different perspectives, a betting perspective, who do we think is going to cover, and a bracket perspective, who do we think is going to advance. Because oftentimes, you know, those are separate things. A team can easily cover against the point spread, but they're not going to win the game. So, but we also, you know, we simulated the tournament 10,000 times through one of our machines to see who's going to win and who has sort of the best percentage chances to win over the course of the tournament. We have the most overseeded and underseeded teams. Who do we think sort of the lower seeds that have a better chance of beating the higher seeds that have a better chance of beating the lower seeds? You know, those 12-5, 11-6 matchups. So, man, you can get it all. There's no way you can't fill out a bracket in the right way if you go to actionnetwork.com.
It's been suggested by some that the USC snub should be investigated. Do you buy that, or do you think, hey, look, this is sports, and at some point we've got to put the decisions in the hands of a committee?
Well, do you mean like – I'm not sure I understand the question.
Like some people are saying that – you know, the selection committee should be pressed on what really went on with USC not getting in. But I look at, you know, USC went 0-5 against the three teams from the conference that did get in. So I think, you know, you could put that up, you know, and others are saying, look, there has to be some, you know, maybe the committee really didn't put USC in because they didn't want to deal with the FBI DOJ thing, or maybe the Pac-12, got snubbed. But it's just the fact that USC didn't get in with an RPI of like 34 and a strength of schedule at 36. They're not among the top 68 teams?
No. Look, I don't disagree with you on that. And I think it has more to do with their conference. Like, it's impossible to say what's happening inside the committee room.
Yeah.
And no one there is going to come out and say, we made this decision because of any potential improprieties that USC is going to get tagged for at some point down the road. They're going to say they made it based on how they did in the conference and that they went winless against teams that did make it. And, you know, there's going to be conspiracy theorists when it comes to the selection committee. And there's going to be some people who get so angry about it. And the thing is, it's going to last for about 72 hours.
Yeah.
And then the games are going to happen, and none of it's going to matter because people are going to start focusing on the games. That's just what people have to get excited about now, is like USC got screwed, Notre Dame got screwed, St. Mary's didn't get in. But the truth is, at the end of the day, none of it's going to matter as soon as they start playing real games on Thursday.
Chad Millman is with us, the Action Network. More opportunities betting in the early round games with some big mismatches and maybe some upsets, or as the tournament progresses, how does that change?
Oh, so much better in the early rounds. You know, it's like the market is flooded with square money. And what that means is it's like the Super Bowl. You know, we spoke before the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people come in on the public side and they start betting the team that everybody else is betting, and it changes what the point spread is in a lot of games. So, you know, very good example, like Miami and Loyola Chicago is a game where Miami is a popular team. They're generally ranked in the top 25. Like from a bracket advancement perspective and from a betting perspective, there's going to be more people betting on Miami than there are Loyola Chicago. But wise guys are going to be all over Loyola Chicago because they know this team. They've seen this team. They think they've got a great point guard who can mess with Miami's sort of man-to-man defense in the way they switch, and it'll be a matchup nightmare for them when someone who can't handle that point guard is on this guy and he can make some plays. New Mexico State, another one of those teams that in the 12-5 matchup that is a great rebounding team that – you know, white guys are going to think will give Clemson a really hard time, but bettors, sort of square bettors who are in Vegas for the weekend that are going to be able to move money and move numbers are going to just think 12-5, it's Clemson, I'm going to bet on the favorite there. So that's where you find the real betting opportunities. It's also where you find the real opportunity to bust somebody else's bracket is when you're thinking about the Murray State over the West Virginias or the New Mexico State over Clemson or Loyola Chicago over Miami. Those are the big opportunities. The longer the tournament goes, the better the numbers get and the harder it is for anybody to make any real money on point spread bets.
I had two knee-jerk thoughts when I saw the bracket. One, I say Gonzaga, put him in the Sweet 16. I love the path that they have. Even beyond that, being in that side of the bracket, I love their path. Two, I looked at Purdue and the way they played early, and I wondered if the rest that Purdue has had now is their friend. And yeah, I wondered if they're not a team that you could pick going all the way. What did you have any knee-jerk reactions when you saw the bracket?
I actually agreed with both of those. My knee-jerks were that the committee gave zero respect to Virginia as the number one overall seed by putting them in the bracket. I think they've got Kentucky. I think they've got Arizona. I think they might have Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Cincinnati, to me, is a Final Four caliber team, and only one team is going to make it from that region. So I think they did a service to Virginia. I was disappointed to see that Michigan State and Kentucky or Duke could potentially meet in the Sweet 16. I thought that was sort of a mismatch in terms of the committee not keeping two high-profile teams like that separate. I thought Purdue had a pretty easy draw and actually liked Cincinnati's draw until it potentially faces Virginia. But those were my knee-jerks. I don't disagree with you about Purdue or Gonzaga.
Chad Millman, The Action Network. Chad, I appreciate you, man.
You bet, man. Thanks for having me on.
There he is. You heard my knee-jerk reactions. I want yours. When you saw the bracket, what were your initial thoughts, your guts? Because what is it? Malcolm Gladwell tells us, you know what, you should trust that first glance, right? So what was that first glance thought that you had when you looked at the bracket? Give it to us at 503-417-7575.
More John Canzano with the Bald-Faced Truth, brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights.
Give me your takeaway on the NCAA tournament. What'd you think when you saw the bracket? Because I thought, oh, USC, I feel bad for you. That's new. That's a new thought. I don't feel bad for USC. Kind of obnoxious. And I suddenly felt bad for USC. Then I thought, well, the Pac-12 had a crappy season. And look at that. Look at those play-in games that were reserved for those have-nots to get into the tournament. Suddenly, we've got the Pac-12 dominating the play-in games. Then I thought, wow, look at Gonzaga's path. Put them in the Sweet 16 right now. They will have no trouble on the opening couple of games of this tournament. As a 4 seed out west, pretty good draw for Gonzaga. And then I looked at Purdue. And Purdue, and we've talked about him on this show, and maybe Jerry Palm of CBS Sports is guilty of infecting my brain. But he started talking about their 5 seniors, and I started looking at their games and looking at the 16 straight games they won earlier this year. And certainly if you would have picked the bracket in January, Purdue would have been a 1 seed. Purdue kind of ran out of gas down the stretch, looked tired. They're a jump-shooting team, and the knock on them may be their one-off night away from being excused from the tournament, and we've seen this happen. But I also kind of think that the rest that they've had and the fact that there's been a delay here now between the end of the regular season, the conference tournament, and now the NCAA tournament, which starts officially. When do we say it starts? People will say, oh, it starts tomorrow or whatever. Nah.
The tournament starts on Thursday.
Thursday, right? What are you going to do Thursday?
Thursday, I'm going to be watching basketball all day. That's when the tournament starts.
I kind of feel like they just play these games to finalize the bracket, right?
I can say I have never watched a play-in game.
I've watched it, but I also don't consider it part of the tournament. I consider it as much a part of the tournament as the conference championship games, right? Because those are play-in games. But once it gets to 64, then it begins. And people get mad, like the purists who want me to follow the rules with what is the tournament. I'll say it starts Thursday. And Gliss, you're right. It starts Thursday. What were your takeaways when you saw the bracket? First thing you thought when you saw the bracket, or as you looked at it more, what did you take away? I want to hear from you at 503-417-7575. Some good things going on in sports. The Blazers go for 10 straight tonight. Beat the Warriors on Friday. Enjoyed a nice weekend. Hold a two-game lead over the Pelicans, the Timberwolves, and the Thunder for the third seed in the Western Conference. I said something ridiculous last night on KGW Sports Sunday. I said, the question was, are the Blazers, this year's Blazers, better than the 2013-2014 Blazers or the 2008-2009 Blazers? Both those teams won 50-plus games. And I said, well, we don't even know if this team's a playoff team yet. So why are we having this discussion? And people are like, well, of course they're a playoff team. I don't think we can say that about anybody in the West right now. The Blazers are three games away from being out of the playoffs. They have a tougher schedule than some of the other teams chasing them. And the margin of victory, or the margin of error here, is very tight. It feels like a little bit like election night. You know what I mean? I gathered the girls around. I said, we're going to have history. We're going to watch a woman get elected president. Girls, I want you to be in this room when this historic moment happens. Then the returns started coming in. And then the kids were like, let's watch something else. The 15-year-old predicted it, though, by the way, on election night. Before all the returns came in, she said, I think the guy's going to win. And I said, whoa, no, it's not. We're here for history. Get an ice cream cone. Come on, let's gather around this historic moment. And then in disbelief, she's like, yeah, I told you. I said, how did you know? She said, because kids in my class were saying, talking politics in the class. And I thought, wow, should start listening to these kids. But the Blazers are not yet in the playoffs. So let's not have that premature discussion, because I feel like we're setting ourselves up. Do I think they're going to make the playoffs? Yes. I think they have about a 90% chance of making the playoffs. So I would say they are probably a playoff team. But they are a bad stretch or a bad run or a bad 10 days away from being on that bubble. And I don't think we want to get to the point where we're saying they are the three seed, because they're certainly in a race right now. Two-game lead over the Pelicans, the Timberwolves, and the Thunder. They have a tougher schedule, than I think, than two of those three teams. And guess what? Utah, that's sitting on the outside of the top eight in the Western Conference, has a soft schedule. And frankly, there's a game late in the season that Utah plays Golden State. And everybody's like, well, they play Golden State second to last game. And I'm like, yeah, but is Golden State going to be playing guys or not? They play the Lakers twice. And by the way, if you look at Utah's schedule, Droz, can you pull up Utah's schedule? I want to say their next four are like, gimme, 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 gimme. And that creates a problem for somebody in the West. I'm not saying it's the Blazers' problem, but somebody in the Western Conference is going to get caught by Utah. Utah's making the playoffs. Who does Utah play in the next four or five?
Detroit, Phoenix, Sacramento, Atlanta, Dallas.
W's. Like, you're Utah? Like, Utah should be holding, like, hey, we're taking reservations and deposits right now on playoff tickets. 503-417-7575. I want your gut reaction when you saw the bracket come out. Larry's in Eugene. Go ahead, Larry.
Yes, I'm just wondering if anybody in the NCAA committee to pick the bracket saw Pac-12 basketball for during January, February, March.
No, I don't think they did.
To even consider Arizona State is ludicrous. Just ridiculous. I think those two words are almost the same. But
yeah.
Because Arizona State, of course, they got swept by Oregon. They got beat by Oregon State. But they lost to Stanford. They lost to Colorado first game of the tournament. They got beat by Arizona twice. I mean, you could have a better case to pick Oregon in, which did not deserve to go, the Ducks. But yet, they showed up better than Arizona State during January, February, and March. And USC, there's nobody in the Pac-10 that would want to play them right now. And I think they could beat USC could beat half the teams in the tournament.
Yeah, so I think you're right.
So can UCLA.
I think USC could have been a Sweet 16 team. Could have been. I also think they went 0-5 against the three teams from the conference that got into the tournament, and that killed them. And Arizona State had, for better or worse, a couple of victories in the early part of the season with everybody healthy against highly seeded teams, like number one seed candidates. And the committee took that into consideration. Now, you can take away the takeaway that Larry just did where he said, I don't think they were watching, and I would buy that. Like, maybe they weren't watching. But I also think, you know, had Oregon just won a couple of more games, because, you know, they had two wins over Arizona State, they split with UCLA, they split with Arizona. If Oregon had just won a couple of more games, I mean, wasn't the committee kind of telling Oregon, we wanted to put you in, but you just didn't win a couple more games? I mean, they basically laid out the path for Oregon to get into the tournament. It wasn't that far away. Like, two more wins. Like, maybe not losing to Washington State would have helped. And winning one more game in the conference tournament, I think that might have done it. Let's go to Mitch, who's in New Jersey. Mitch, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's happening, John?
Not a lot.
All right. Well, one thing, you kids did see history because, you know, we got the clown, the one of the worst toupee guys, the both clowns. You kids can have my vote for $10. What I don't like is how the Pac-12 got screwed. Yeah. Even Arizona being a four, USC not being in, and UCLA and Arizona's ASU playing this playing game, it's ridiculous. They don't like Pac-12 teams, it seems.
Yeah, I also, I think that I really worry about the tournament when I see decisions like this. I worry about scheduling because I think what's going to happen, what the selection committee overwhelmingly said in even picking the at-large teams that were out of the Pac-12 conference is they said, if you schedule tough, we're going to reward you. I worry that, you know, a lot of college basketball is about the journey. It's about getting your team to be playing the best possible basketball at the end of the season. I worry that we're picking a postseason tournament based upon results that happened in November. You know, if you're going to take the November and December results and overvalue those, I think you're going to get some screwy things that happen in the tournament because I think teams are going to be playing dramatically different. I think coaches have to hate how they pick this tournament because coaches are all about, hey, let's get an early season test, then it's the journey, and by the end of the year, we want to be playing our best basketball and get into the tournament. That's the goal. Well, the committee really didn't reward that kind of thinking, did they? 503-417-7575. What do Oregonians do better than anybody? I'll tell you next.
More John Canzano with the bald-faced truth, brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights.
Our big splash is coming up, and that's appropriate because it's a warm day. Is it 70 yet? Did we hit 70 in the Portland metropolitan area? I'll have to take a look at that. I am currently, like, I can look around the country. It's currently 73 degrees in Honolulu. So if you want to compare what we got going to Honolulu, it's 71 in Las Vegas. Phoenix has it at 81 right now.
That's too hot this time of year.
Phoenix is like, oh, can I get a sweater? L.A., a mostly cloudy and 62 currently. The Bay Area, Palo Alto showing 73 and cloudy. We're currently seeing in the Portland metropolitan area temperatures that have exceeded 70 degrees. In the Portland metro area, Corvallis is at 65. Eugene is at 63. Portland, 68. West Lynn, the main streets of West Lynn, reporting a 73 degrees. Why warmer there? Sweater weather over there, West Lynn. What do we do better than anybody else? You know what we do better? We come outside when the weather is good. We wait. We put face paint on. It's like one of those movies where they're waiting to ambush somebody and they, you know, they all hide and they pull like branches over themselves and leaves and everything looks, you know, and then the wagon comes through and then everybody, they jump out and ambush them. That's how we are with good weather. Except we've like we lay, we're all pasty white and we're all laying there quiet. We're waiting for the sun to come out. And then, man, when that sun comes out, it's like, suddenly everybody's got the noodles, those foam noodles that you take into the pools, and everybody's got beach blanket and there's a beach ball. Some yahoo has a soccer ball. He's juggling it on the waterfront down at the park. It's like all of a sudden, bam, we're out. Bike riding. We just burst out into this. It's like we're ready. It's like Christmas morning. We do it better than anybody. And I know they do it in Eugene, and I know they do it in Corvallis, and I know they do it in Salem. In Klamath Falls, in Albany. People in Albany, they're so ready when the weather gets good. But the Portland metropolitan area was a thing yesterday. And all you have to do is go to the hardware store. I go to Milwaukee Lumber. That's my place. All you have to do is be at Milwaukee Lumber on a weekend morning, and you'll see that here come the people. Everybody's going to the home improvement store. And everybody's getting ready to do something. We got to fix it up. I did it. I mowed the lawn yesterday for the first time in like forever. I was complaining about that back lawn. Not the front yard, but the backyard. You know, it's like the area that, you know, like, hey, I can just let it go in the winter. And the back lawn is it gets soggy. So I don't like to mow it when it's wet. So some people will mow like routinely, regularly. I have neighbors who they're just religious and they are disciplined about when they mow their lawn. I'm not that disciplined. I need some good weather. I need the lawn to be mostly dry. I want to be able to cut the grass and not have it just be all chunky, whatever. But man, I got out there, I was mowing. There's a couple of times it almost like it was starting to stall because the grass was too thick. Gliss knows what I'm talking about. He gets out there. You kind of have to lift the mower up and let the blades come down on the grass to kind of give it a chance. You know what I'm talking about?
I do. I almost got out and did some yard work this weekend, but in the end, I decided I was too tired to do it. So
I pulled through the drive-thru today of Starbucks because I wanted to ask the barista for an iced coffee. And I ordered a iced vanilla latte, and I felt good about it. I've ordered iced drinks all through the winter, but now I wasn't going to get a comment today. Because normally they're like, oh, it's a little too cold for the iced coffee. I'm like, it's not cold in my car, okay? It's not cold inside my house. It's not cold in this studio. I can have an iced beverage. And then the barista said the most interesting thing. He said, you know, are you enjoying the weather? And I was like, yeah, it's really nice out here. You should get outside. And he said, well, I did yard work yesterday. And then he started to tell me all about the yard work and I stopped listening to him. I'm not lying. I was somewhere else because I started thinking, what yard work do I have to do? And I had a patio that I had the most interesting experience this morning. I never thought I would do this. We've got this patio outside, and then we have the swim spa that the kids were all like, can we swim later today? And I was like, yeah, okay, we'll get it all ready. And so I heated up the swim spa to an appropriate temperature. For them, it's 88 degrees, which is like a bath. And I'm like, okay, it's all heated up. The water's good. We have Anderson Pool Works, who they come and service it, so the water was all great. So I was like, okay, we're ready. And then I realized I had put last summer, I had hung lights in this patio area. And over the winter, I didn't notice, but apparently in the winds, a strand of the lights blew down. So in the patio, what I had were the strand of lights. I was like, oh, I have to put that back up. So I put it back up this morning. And I realized in horror that a few of the lights were broken. I got glass all over the patio that I didn't know about, right? And I got little kids. So I swept, but it wasn't picking it all up. You know what I'm talking about? Like when you're sweeping outside on like pavers and you've got little shards of glass for tiny little feet that are going to be a problem this afternoon. So I thought, what am I going to do here? I swept and swept and swept. Didn't work. I tried the hose. Didn't really work. Just kind of moved the glass around. I couldn't get rid of it. Then I thought, man, if I only could just vacuum clean that up, it would be great. And I realized I have a vacuum cleaner that is for out. It can work outdoors. It's like a shop vac. So I went and got the shop vac. I never thought I would do this outside. I turned that thing on. I got down on my hands and knees, and I was like, you know, that patio has never been cleaner. I shop vac'd up everything. And and while I'm doing it, I noticed in the patio, there was a crack that was in one of the corners that when I shop vac'd out of it, some things came out of it. Like a snail shell with no snail in it came out. And I vacuumed it up. And some other things that were looked like they didn't belong in there came out. And I'm down on my hands and knees, and suddenly I realize that is not just a crack. That's somebody's house. And I'm down there face to face with the biggest, baddest spider I have ever seen. Face to face at that 6 inches away. And the spider is just looking at me, and I'm looking at the spider. So I have a couple of moves I can make there. I can jump to my feet and stomp it. I can smash it with my hand, which the kids would all be really impressed with when I later told the story. Or I can vacuum it up and take my chances with it later. Because if I vacuum it, though, I started to think in that moment as I started to reach toward it, like to just whoosh, gone, I thought, I'm going to have to deal with the spider later if I just vacuum it up. Because it's going to go into the system. And when I empty that shop vac, it's going to be waiting in there with all those goodies. So I did what every reasonable, regular American male would do. I first looked around to see if there was anybody that was watching, like any of the kids around. No. Then I just stepped back and squash. That was a big spider. Then I vacuumed it up afterwards. And people are going to be mad. Oh, it was a cruel thing for me to do. That spider was killing lots of other bugs that would have been a nuisance. No, that spider was scary. I'm here to tell you, it would have caused a panic. My wife would have called me. If she ever encountered that spider, I would have got a call at work. She might have called 911 and said, there's a large animal at my house. That's how big that spider was. That spider was, I'm not making this up, bigger than, like if you had put it on your face of your regular iPhone, from span to span, it would have covered, you know, across the screen.
I've had spiders like that in my house before, and same thing. I did not mess around. That thing had to go down immediately.
Yeah, this is not something that could wait.
No, the only thing that was gross is one time it was on a wall, and, you know, I squashed it. And it made a sound. I mean, it almost sounded like I killed an animal or something.
It was a squeal. I kept wondering, there must be more. Like, there have to be other ones out there. Maybe that was the little brother that I got today. and I don't like spraying out there because the kids are running around. So I probably won't bug spray it. But hopefully she won't listen to the show. But my wife would be terrified. She hates spiders. I'll get like a shriek, like there's a home invasion going on from the other room. Like, oh my God! And I'll walk in there like ready to, like, I got a bat in my hands. And then she go, look! And she points at the wall. And I'm like, oh, spider. All right, our big splash is coming up in the next segment. I want to give a shout out to John's Waterproofing. Go to bettercrawlspaces.com if you have a basement issue. If you have, like, you know, you heard me take care of my spider problem. If you have a problem with your home that you go, hey, I need an expert on with a foundation or a basement or a crawl space, or you have standing water, or you have mold, or you have mildew, for crying out loud, we live in the Pacific Northwest where it's wet. BetterCrawlSpaces.com. BetterCrawlSpaces.com. They can take care of you at John's Waterproofing.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano. Brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights.
Our big splash is coming up. Drew's got my ear during the break, and he said, I brought up three things that in the last segment of radio that sort of sewed together his weekend. What do you mean? Glass, spiders, and good weather?
Yeah, so I'll take it back to Friday night first. I'm over at my girlfriend's place, and she breaks a glass all over the floor. And I do my best job to vacuum it all up, I think. I kind of run my hand over it. I'm like, okay, good, there's no glass. And she gets off the couch and just slices her foot open on a huge piece that I missed. So there's one.
She broke the glass?
Yeah, she knocked it off the table.
She broke the glass. You cleaned it up, but you didn't do a good enough job.
Exactly.
Boy. You tried to do a good thing.
There was this huge piece of glass that I'm so mad at myself for missing out on. Yesterday, she comes over, and I have a pool at my apartment complex. She goes, wow, the weather's been really nice, like, all week, and have people been taking advantage of it? And so I'm like, no, I didn't know, you know, the weather was that big of a deal here.
Yeah, the minute the sun comes out, you have to be ready. Mm-hmm. That's why I always have swim trunks on underneath my jeans, like, in case the weather turns, even in December. If the weather turns, I just go, and I'm ready. Like the pull-away NBA sweatpants. Mm-hmm. Just go, bam, and you're ready. So what happened?
Well, and then the third thing with the...
back to the weather. Did you go in the pool?
No, I didn't. I've never used the pool. The last time I saw somebody in it was right before the pool turned green for 2 months because we didn't have a maintenance guy there. So, yeah, we just kind of... I don't even go near it. It's just there.
What do you mean you don't have a maintenance guy?
There, for a time being, the maintenance guy had, you know, he was done with the job, and they didn't hire somebody new, so the pool was just green for 2 months.
And you're paying for that.
I don't use the pool. I told them, I'm like, I'm not using that. It's just there.
Maybe you're the pool guy, and you don't know it. Like, you read the fine print on
the closest one to the pool, therefore I have to be the one to clean it.
On your rental agreement, does it not say that in the months of December and January, you're the pool guy? And everybody, that's why everybody's looking at you. Nobody will talk to you.
Yeah, I've yet to speak to a single neighbor since I moved.
They're like, that Droz guy, he moved in. Everybody kept the pool pristine. His 2 months, garbage.
Nobody has outdoor pools in Colorado.
Algae.
And then last night, she gets home and, you know, she's like, oh, good night and whatnot. 5 minutes later, I get a phone call and she's like screaming on the phone. I think somebody's breaking in.
Yeah.
And she goes, there's a spider in my bed. And I'm like, it's just kill it. Just grab the spider and throw it away or throw it in the toilet. Do something. Yeah. I'm like, just get rid of it.
How far away were you when she called you?
Oh, 35 minutes. I live in Gresham. She lives in Selwood. So I was nowhere near.
She's calling you, going, take care of this?
Yeah.
We have at our security system has a panic button. And so in various places in the house, all you have to do is push the button and boom, police come, right? So this was installed for security reasons, but this morning, the three-year-old said she was trying to turn on the light, and she thought the button was the light, so she pushed the panic button. Of course, all hell broke loose, and within seconds, people are going, you know, what's the keyword and all this, and I was like, they have to be used to this, like three-year-olds doing it. But I half expected somebody saw a spider when the siren started going off and everything started, you know, happening. Somebody gonna see a spider? I got it. Like, let me go get a Kleenex. Let me get some toilet paper. I got this thing. Because I've graduated. I used to just swat it with like a magazine. Now I try to take it alive with like in my hands. A guy on Twitter says he uses a jar. You use a jar too?
If it's not in an area where I think anyone's in direct harm, then yes. I usually go get a cup or something.
What
and
do
then-
you do with it?
I just put it outside. I walk it out to the yard and I let it live. I put it in the backyard somewhere.
Like Charlotte's Web over here at your house.
I guess. I mean, yes, everybody in my house is definitely afraid of spiders as well. So,
and you're
I mean,
the guy growing them in the backyard.
Yeah, I'm not growing them. I'm
breeding
just,
them.
Hey, they deserve to live. And unless, like I said, if they're one of those big ones that are on the wall, I always just kind of gauge the situation and see what kind of spider it is and then determine what I'm going to do with it.
People say you should migrate the harmless spiders and kill the dangerous ones. I don't have time to do a background check on a spider.
That's pretty much what I do right there.
like, how do you tell which one's a harmful one and which one's a harmless one?
If it looks scary, I guess.
Yeah. If it has a neck tattoo, you go. Oh, that guy!
It's
that spider's
not very
gotta
scientific.
Go.
Yeah, that's for sure.
If he's got a Harley and a neck tattoo, that spider's got to go. That is not a harmless spider. You're judging, like you're profiling spiders.
I guess I am, but you know, if it's a little tiny spider and everyone's still afraid of it, then I'm just going to put it somewhere safer away from everybody.
People are giving me all these great ideas on Twitter. They're saying spray your house down with peppermint oil. Yeah, because I want to smell like I'm a lifesaver role. The other one says, spray down all the cracks in the corners of your house with the insecticide. That's where the spiders go. It'll kill them all off. Okay, that's one idea. How do you keep spiders out of your house? People say you should vacuum regularly. That'll be the biggest thing with getting rid of spiders. That's a good idea. All right, this, of course, brings us to what we needed to do all show, and I'm finally getting around to doing.
This is
the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it.
Where? Down there.
But the Big Splash. Brought to you by Carl's Jr.
49ers and Richard Sherman have agreed to a 3-year contract, officially announced by the team yesterday. But this is interesting to me, and I think it's the biggest splash today, because some Seahawks fans are mad at Richard Sherman, saying that he should have had the decency to go to a team outside their own division. Look, don't hate the player. What? Hate the game. This is a game Richard Sherman's playing. He's a professional athlete. The 49ers have offered him a contract. He'd like to stay in the West Coast, and oh, he also gets to play the Seahawks twice. Richard Sherman, nothing like a defensive back who's been scorned. Is that how the saying goes? I don't know. But the bottom line is this. If you are a Seahawks fan, I think it's okay for you to still say, gosh, love the guy while he was here. Now I can't stand the guy. And if you're a 49er fan who couldn't stand Richard Sherman when he was running around in a Seahawks uniform, barking at the 49ers, barking during post-game interviews, it's okay for you to now say, hey, I kind of root for that guy and I like that guy.
Richard, let me ask you the final play. Take me through it.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get. Don't you ever talk about me.
Who was talking about you?
Crabtree, don't you open your mouth about the best. Or I'm going to shatter for you real quick.
My favorite part of that is when she's like, who was talking about you?
Who was talking about you?
Crabtree, don't you?
that's like a civil exchange in between all the barking. But the bottom line, and the one thing you need to know, is look, it's sports. You root for the team. Or as some say, you root for the jersey, not the player. Droz, you're a jersey collector. You root for the jersey. People root for the jersey, not the players. Because the minute Damian Lillard ends up with another team, Blazer fans will hate him. Same goes for CJ McCollum. Same went for LaMarcus Aldridge. It happens. This is not the saddest day in Seahawks history. There have been plenty of others. It's just a reminder. It's show business, not show friends. Richard Sherman has to do what's right for Richard Sherman. The Seahawks have to do what's right for them. It's not that different than Ronnie Lott, once a 49er, then a Raider. Did the 49er fans hate Ronnie Lott for that? I don't think so. And Niner fans, you got to be happy with this. It's a really good and a favorable contract that works in their favor. A lot of hope. Think about this if you're buying stock in the Niners. Jimmy Garoppolo finishes the year by just winning and winning and winning. You've got good draft picks. You're sitting pretty in a draft. You have a GM that you have at least some confidence will get it right. And now you've added Richard Sherman with a contract that really only works for Richard Sherman if he performs. I think it's a good position to be in all the way around. And the Seahawks, by the way, get to start over with all the cap room in the world. So there you go. All right, it's been a great radio show. I appreciate everybody out there that makes the Bald Faced Truth part of their day. Go to baldfacedtruth.com if you want to see more about this radio program. Make sure you subscribe as well on iTunes and SoundCloud. We podcast all the interviews and the show daily. All right, the Bald Faced Truth will be back tomorrow with a great radio show. And enjoy the great weather. BFT not here for a long time. Just a good time. Keep it here in Portland on 102.9 The Game.